from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So really excited to begin a brand new chapter here for Dog Nation Daily. You heard the voice there tell you. Dog Nation Daily is now presented by my good friends at Marco's Pizza. And I say this with all truth, that my kids have been huge fans of Marco's Pizza for a long time. And, you know, anytime that we have, you know, one of these sort of nights at home where nobody wants to really get out, you know, to have the Marco's Pizza delivered is always a big hit for our family. It puts smiles on our faces every single time. And so I'm really excited about this brand new chapter of our program with Marco's Pizza a part of it. It's going to be a really fun spring and summer heading into the fall for Dog Nation Daily. And really excited about having Marco's Pizza along for the ride everywhere we go here, because we're going a lot of places here. As you head towards G-Day coming up on April 21st and a whole lot more after that and beyond that, I am very, very proud to say that Dog Nation Daily is now presented by Marco's Pizza. And I want to start our week off here with what I think is going to be a pretty interesting conversation coming from what I thought were really candid comments by Kirby Smart going back to Saturday. Seth Emerson had written a really good piece at DogNation.com, where he was in the midst of sort of preparing to write this really good piece for DogNation.com, kind of talking about what some of the Georgia players had said about how the loss to Alabama in the national championship game was a source of motivation. And, you know, you see this from time to time. There are certain things that players don't mind talking about. There are certain things that players, you know, seem to sort of avoid at all costs. And, you know, the point that Seth made to Kirby in a, you know, post-practice Q&A was that, hey, you know, you've got a lot of guys who are not really dodging these issues. They're willing to talk about this. They're willing to speak about how being that close to winning a national championship and coming up just short against Alabama serves as a bit of motivation for the upcoming season, for maybe Georgia to kind of kick in that door and do what the program has not done since 1980. Well, that may be the way that some of the players feel, and that may be the way they talk to each other, but apparently Kirby Smart is intent not to talk about that at all, and that's not a kind of road he wants to go down any way, form, fashion whatsoever. Here is what Kirby Smart said about that subject on Saturday.
I don't even talk about it. So the fact that they're talking to y'all about it is just because you asked. And if you ask our kids, their immediate response is, oh, yeah, it's motivation, it's motivation. We don't discuss that because that team is no longer here. I mean, I don't believe in motivating through fear or motivating just through revenge. Now, can revenge be a factor? Yeah. But we don't have Alabama on our schedule next year, not the regular season schedule. We got a lot more to worry about than that.
So I think that's kind of interesting from Kirby Smart, and this is one of those moments where I'm really glad I get to work with a guy like, say, Mike Johnson on SEC Country Live in the afternoons, because Mike has been so good about explaining this kind of stuff to us in the past, that what he would say about Alabama is the school that he played at, and we know because Kirby worked at Alabama, there's some things about Georgia and Alabama that are probably similar in these kinds of instances. What Mike would say to us about Alabama, and he's told these stories many times, is that when it comes to subjects like this, Nick Saban isn't talking about that at all. And so Kirby Smart, in the role of UGA head coach, he is probably avoiding this conversation at all costs. He's only talking about the nuts and bolts of getting through that day's practice or whatever the goals for the week are, whatever the definition of attack the day may be in any given day. That's the only thing that Kirby Smart is talking about. So he's telling the truth when he says that. But what Mike would explain to us about Alabama is that the head coach is not the only one speaking on behalf of the program. That while the head coach may have a very specific agenda for the messages that he's delivering, and they may only be about, you know, that team or that day's activities, you've got strength and conditioning coaches. At Alabama, it's a guy named Scott Cochran. At Georgia, it's obviously Scott Sinclair. And a lot of times that strength and conditioning coach, especially during the offseason, when the head coach is restricted with the amount of time that he can spend with the players, it's that strength and conditioning coach who's sort of delivering the message for the program. The idea of revenge tour a year ago, Georgia beating all the teams in 2017 that had beaten it in 2016, the odds are that that message, the idea of a revenge tour, to the extent they had been talked about, that didn't come from Kirby Smart. That probably came from Scott Sinclair. Heading to the SEC championship game, Georgia's only regular season loss in 2017 to Auburn, the dog crap comments about from Gus Malzahn, we beat the dog crap out of Georgia. Georgia apparently did, according to what some players said after the game, including, I guess it was Isaac Nott of the tight end that that let us know a lot about this. Georgia had been using some of that as motivation, but probably not coming from Kirby Smart. Once again, probably coming from strength coach Scott Sinclair. So important to point out here that Kirby Smart has plausible deniability on this. He can say, yeah, we're not using any of that as motivation. I'm worried about this practice. But it doesn't mean that just because Kirby Smart's not speaking, that no one's speaking on issues like this. My guess is Scott Sinclair and some of his strength and conditioning staff, those guys that have control of the motivational aspects of Georgia program, my guess is they're speaking about this quite a bit. But that doesn't mean that what Kirby Smart said there isn't some justifiable point to pay attention to here, some sort of justifiable reason why focusing too much on the disappointment of how 2017 season ended could potentially be a problem for Georgia. And here's where I think Kirby Smart gets pretty interesting. He sort of gives us some insight into his own thoughts about what he wants to see his team sort of take as a mental, psychological, emotional approach to the 2018 season. And I think this is pretty interesting from Kirby. Take a listen to the coach one more time.
I would rather have some kind of intrinsic motivation of I want to be the best player I can be. I want to get to be the best I can be. I don't want it to be because of this, because you may not always have that. You may not always have that ability to generate that motivation. So we don't really talk about it. I mean, it's we talk about the lessons we learn in coverage, the lessons we learn in keeping the quarterback in the pocket, protecting the ball. We learn lessons from the game, but we're not using the game as a mantra, a battle cry. I just don't think that's what you want to do.
So two halves of that comment there from Kirby Smart. The latter half of, hey, we're focused more on the X's and O's of the game than the feeling that was left over from the game. Listen, I made my point a moment ago why that's partially true and also probably, I believe, partially untrue. But how about the beginning of that statement from Kirby Smart? The idea of we want intrinsic motivation as opposed to using the Alabama game, the Alabama loss as motivation. Now, intrinsic's probably a bigger word than I should be using here on a Dog Nation Daily, but I'm pretty sure I know what that means. I'm pretty sure intrinsic means something that comes from within. Motivation to be the best coming from within side of you as opposed to an outside external motivating factor like, I want to prove to Alabama that we really are better than them. I want to prove to Alabama that if we play them again in the SEC championship, the national championship, it's going to go different this time. Sometimes those sort of external motivating factors can be somewhat weak over time, where intrinsic motivation is the kind of thing you can replicate day after day, month after month, maybe even year after year. So from that standpoint, I think Kirby Smart is making an interesting point. What Kirby also does not say there, which maybe he could say, is that, hey, you know, let's be honest here for a moment. That 2017 team, that loss that it suffered to Alabama, most of those guys that really contributed in a big way to that, you know, they're gone. It was their SEC championship. It was their college football playoff appearance. And, you know, if Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel and Davin Bellamy, Roquan Smith, Dominic Sanders, Lorenzo Carter, if those guys are returning, maybe there's a room and an opportunity for them to use that as motivation. But a lot of the guys who sort of fill in for those spots for those guys this year are guys that were not as central to that storyline in 2017 as they will be in 2018. One of the reasons why, as a motivating factor for Georgia, maybe that doesn't work too well. But there's a flip side of that coin as well. Another reason why using Alabama as a measuring stick for success here in 2018, using the carrot of getting back to play the Tide again, maybe even Atlanta in the SEC championship game in December, why that might be good for Georgia is when you look at what Georgia does have on its schedule, and I don't mean to, you know, overlook anybody here, there's an argument to be made that Georgia just won't be pushed that much by the teams it plays this season, especially the teams inside its own division. Now, owning the East is still a big goal for Georgia in 2018, but owning the East might not be that difficult to do. I don't think Florida's going to be very good. I don't think Tennessee's going to be very good. South Carolina's probably a top 25 team, but they shouldn't be a threat to Georgia. At least that's my best guess from the vantage point here this spring. It's also worth pointing out that Kirby Smart was asked about Georgia's competition in the East, including teams like Tennessee and Florida, that both have new coaches. He was asked about them on Saturday, and it's probably safe to say that Kirby Smart doesn't share my beliefs necessarily about the division, but for now, he's not really worried about the Vols, Gators, or anybody else. Here's Kirby again.
I look at it just like I did last year. I mean, we got to beat them. The names and faces may change, but the places are all the same. So, I mean, I'm not concerned with what they're doing, and they're not probably concerned with what we're doing. We're obviously trying to develop a team that believes in its self-confidence, but I don't concern myself with what those guys are doing.
So listen, the overall bottom line for me is when it comes to should the Alabama loss that Georgia suffered in January be used as motivation for 2018, there is potentially a good and a bad reason for, you know, why that either should be done or maybe something that should be avoided. As Kirby Smart said a moment ago, it's bad if you can't develop your own sense of intrinsic motivation, or if it's bad if you allow some of the younger, sort of rising sophomore, juniors, whatever, sort of allow that to have a sense of entitlement of being in the college football playoff is where we were a year ago, therefore it's our birthright to be back there again, and that idea of using the national championship loss as motivation becomes a bad thing. But the way that it ends up potentially being good, though, is in terms of now measuring yourself against the highest available standard in college football. And Georgia's earned the right to do that now based on what it did in 2017. And like it or not, for now, that is Alabama. And a chance at revenge, a chance at a rematch with Alabama, potentially a pretty good source of motivation for UGA. I know for a lot of fans, that's exactly what they hope to see happen by the end of 2018. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. And we are presented by Marco's Pizza. And it's great to have Marco's Pizza as a part of our program each and every day. And, of course, a lot of ways for you to access Dog Nation Daily. You can watch us on video live at 10 a.m. on either the Dog Nation Facebook or YouTube pages. We certainly appreciate you checking us out on video each and every day. You can listen to us on the radio with my friends in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Of course, the folks in 960 The Ref hopping after a weekend in which Georgia took 2 of 3 from Texas A&M in baseball. Diamond Dogs red hot right now. You can hear the Diamond Dogs baseball coverage there on 960 The Ref. You can also check us out on podcast form, wherever podcasts are found, Apple Podcasts, the Android devices. I post the show every day at theworldfamousdognation.com. We just want to make Dog Nation Daily as easy for you to find as we can possibly make it. And of course, we're glad to have Marco's Pizza as our presenting sponsor here now on Dog Nation Daily. And Marco's got a great offer for you in honor of the debut here on Dog Nation Daily. They want you to meet the boss of all cheese pizza, the big cheese from Marco's. It's made with 5 fresh cheeses, and right now you can get an extra large for just $10.99. $10.99 gets you the big cheese from Marco's, and we're really excited about having Marco's here on Dog Nation Daily. Also excited in a couple of moments, Mondays normally here on Dog Nation Daily means our buddy Chip Towers, who covers the Georgia Bulldogs on DogNation.com. Chip taking a little day off today. We'll catch up with Chip again next week. In his place today, though, I'm really happy to welcome longtime expert on college football, a guy that I followed for years and years, but I believe we're going to welcome into Dog Nation Daily for the very first time today, Tony Barnhart from the SEC Network, now doing some writing for TMGCollegeSports.com. He's going to be with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. I love Tony, and I'm really excited about having him on the program today. So we'll do that here coming up in just a couple of moments. Of course, before that, I'm coming to you here live on Monday, April 2nd, which means that yesterday was Easter Sunday, also happened to be April 1st, which is known as April Fool's Day. And, of course, some people on social media can't avoid the opportunity to throw a little April Fool's joke out there. One of those guys was the 5-star defensive end, the Georgia commit for the class 2019, Nolan Smith. A lot of you are probably aware of this by now. But Nolan initially put out there, now he first sort of put the tweet out there of, I'm going to have a big announcement at 10 p.m. And that, you know, gets people's attention. And here's the tweet. If you're watching on video, you'll be able to see this. He says, much love. And then he has the same kind of like, you know, notes graphic that other people like to do from time to time. He says, I'm publicly announcing my decommitment from the University of Georgia. Now, this is something that had been talked about as a possibility, you know, months ago. There's not been as much of that here lately. But Nolan Smith sort of put that out there. There were some heart palpitations all across the South from Georgia fans who were maybe worried, from some Alabama fans, Clemson fans who maybe thought they had a chance now. But as some would have expected, this all turned out to be a bit of a work on Nolan's part, because the next tweet that came from him was an announcement. This was all an April Fool's Happy Easter joke from Nolan Smith, and he's obviously having a good time with this. I think there's a couple things that we take from this in terms of Nolan's experience here. First of all, you know, kids want to enjoy their recruitment. This is Nolan, you know, choosing to enjoy his this way. And I've said over and over again that these guys should be able to have the freedom and the space to sort of enjoy their recruitment, any way, that they want to, whether it be Jaden Hazelwood taking visits, Nolan playing around on social media. If you want to swim in the deepest waters of recruiting, you're going to be going after prospects that to a certain extent enjoy cultivating the attention, and Nolan seems to enjoy that. I'm not going to be mad at him for it. I think this is also a reminder that, Nolan Smith feels good enough about his UGA commitment to, you know, not really. I don't think Georgia fans should be too worried about that right now. After all, it was just about a week ago what we played the audio here on Dog Nation Daily of Nolan making a push for somebody to join him in that 2019 class. Do you remember a week ago when Nolan Smith was saying this to the four-star defensive back, Andrew Booth?
I need DBs. I need a back end. Andrew Booth, I need you. Andrew Booth, I need you. You're a DB. You're an amazing DB. I need DBs. Like that. We already got the wide receivers. We already got the running backs. We already got D linemen, inside linebackers, outside linebackers. We need DBs.
So a lot of we references there to the University of Georgia, which I think Georgia fans should take as a really good sign that Nolan Smith is solid to UGA. The April Fool's joke doesn't do much to change that. Having some fun on social media, but these guys go through this recruitment once in their lives, and I guess that's exactly you know what they're going to do, choose to have a little fun with that. We're hoping you're having fun with us here today on Dog Nation Daily. As promised, he's a great, great voice, covering college football for a long time, but making his debut on Dog Nation Daily today. Let's get ready to welcome in Tony Barnhart here to Dog Nation Daily. And I will say hello to him. He's, like I said, a guy that I've read and spoken to and loved having a part of college football for a long time, and it's great to have him here on Dog Nation Daily here today. It is Tony Barnhart. You can see on the SEC Network. You can read his work now on tmgcollegesports.com. He's also got a great golf tournament coming up here that we will look forward to telling you about over the course of our conversation here. Tony, welcome to Dog Nation Daily for the very first time, though. It's good to have you with us.
Well, Brandon, I'm glad we finally got a chance to do this. Thanks for asking.
Absolutely. I'm really glad you're on the program here today, too. And you've been taking a lot of visits around a lot of places around the South here as of late, and I want to talk to you about some of those SEC schools that you stopped in at. But let me obviously start here with Georgia for a moment. And, you know, in some form or fashion, Tony, the thing that we end up talking about on this show every day is how Georgia in 2018 replaces so much of what worked for Georgia in 2017. Whether it be the two running backs, Chubb and Michelle, the linebackers, you know, Davin and Lorenzo, Roquan, even guys like Dominic Sanders in the secondary. Georgia just lost a lot of really proven talents off its 2017 team. I mean, how do you think Georgia handles that? You're going to be traveling to Georgia to see practice for yourself here in a couple of days, but what do you think of Georgia's sort of transformation here with new leadership and a lot of new names in key positions?
Well, when you're building a program, this is the inevitable consequence of it. And the goal, of course, and everybody knows this, is that you want to recruit at such a level so that when you lose talented people, you replace them with talented people. Usually not with as much experience, but they do have the talent and the ability to learn. Obviously, the example that we all like to use is Alabama. Alabama's been able to, really, since Nick Saban's second year, they've been in the conversation, except for 2010, because they've been able to plug in great players and develop those players. And there's no question in my mind that's what Georgia will do. Now, will they be as good this year as they were last year? I don't think so, but they're going to have a lot of talented people, and I do believe they'll be picked to win the East when we all converge in Atlanta in July.
Yeah, and you used that word talent. I think that's the one that's going to come up a lot because for people like me who do follow the recruiting stuff closely, if you look at the overall composite level, I mean, Georgia's probably on paper maybe a more talented team in 2018 than it was in 2017, but there's obviously, you know, less experience. I mean, how do you sort of on the sort of sliding scale here, the continuum, sort of compare talent to experience? I mean, how important is experience in your mind?
It's important, but it's not as important as talent.
Right.
I think talent is the ultimate. You want both. You want talent. You want to start with talented players, and then you want to develop them into guys that you know who can handle a little bit of everything. Because you know this league's grind now. It's incredible grind, and the young talented players don't appreciate what a grind it is until they hit the first November when they've really played a lot. So, yeah, I always start with talent. You got to have talent, but then you've got to develop those guys. And that's something I think Kirby Smart and his staff will certainly do.
There was a time not all that long ago that you wouldn't have seen a Jake Fromm and a Justin Fields in the same team at the same time. You may not have even seen like a Jacob Eason and a Jake Fromm and like a Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts. You've got these sort of tandems of really good quarterbacks sharing the same roster in a way that even a few years ago you didn't see. So in a lot of ways, I guess even for a guy like you who's covered this for a long time, this is sort of uncharted waters to a certain extent. I mean, if you had to make your best prediction, how would you assume that the Fromm Fields competition to the extent that there is one. How do you think that plays out both over the course of this year and in the next two or three years, I guess?
Well, yeah, let's take the first year because this, again, I haven't met with the coaches yet. I'll do that later on in the week. But my sense, the example I always like to use is Chris Leak and Tim Tebow in 06 at Florida. Now, obviously, the whole world wanted Tim Tebow, but Chris Leak was a veteran quarterback, was going to end up being one of the greatest passers in the history of University of Florida. And what Dan Mullen did, obviously, was put together a package of plays that Tebow could do to take advantage of his unique skill set. And to me, I could be wrong, but to me, that's what's going to happen here with Fields. Now, I haven't seen him play in person. I've seen video like everybody else. But when I go around this league, every coach I talk to, they look at me like, man, Jake Fromm's something special. I mean, he is something special. And so my sense, certainly for this year, will be that Jake Fromm's the starting quarterback if he stays healthy, and that they will take advantage of Justin Fields' incredible skill set. And it's obviously, you can watch the film. But to me, that's how it's going to play out.
You visited Alabama recently. You've been doing these tours during the spring for a long time. You're on the Alabama mm-hmm. campus, and you've seen, you know, what they look like this spring. They've got their own quarterback thing going on, as I said, with Tua and Jalen. Of course, Tua has been hurt. I don't know if he was even practicing at all when you were there. But how would you say what's going to happen in Tuscaloosa between Jalen and Tua is either similar or different to the Fromm Fields thing? I mean, that's its own quarterback story for a very different reason, and I would imagine you're probably just as curious about that as you are what's going to happen here in Athens.
Sure. I mean, when I asked Nick Saban about it, he said, look, I told both guys that they were going to get a shot at the job. And everybody's got to understand, as well as Tua played in the national championship game, when you're talking about Jalen Hurts, you're talking about a guy who got you to two national championship games and was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year. Now, does he throw the ball as well as you'd like? Probably not. But he is a special talent. At the end of the day, it depends on how far back this injury puts Tua. But it would not surprise me to see Jalen Hurts start the first game. But then now you know you've got something special coming on in the field. You know, I had been getting responses about Tua really the whole year saying, man, you got to see this guy. He can really spin it. So it's going to be an interesting competition. It'll be interesting to see what Nick Saban ultimately decides to do because they've got a completely different skill set.
Yeah, and, you know, to be blunt here for a moment, Jalen Hurts is obviously plenty good to play, and he's certainly a very good quarterback, but I just happen to think that Tua Tagovailoa is probably better based on some of the whispers that would happen from Alabama last fall and the sort of brief window of time we've seen Tua Tagovailoa play. He's just really good at the most important thing for a quarterback, which is slinging the ball down the field. Am I uh-huh. being sort of too sort of trite by saying that Hurts is good, but Tua is just probably better?
He's better because he can throw the ball much more consistently. And that ultimately may be what wins him the job. But to me, you've got to have the option of playing Jalen Hurts, particularly in short yardage situations, goal line situations, because of his power and his athletic ability. And let's face it, you know, Nick Saban wants to manage this situation. The last thing he's going to do is name a starting quarterback after spring practice. That is, even without the injury, that was never going to happen. So he wants to manage these guys, get them both to the season, and give himself some options. Either bringing Tua off the bench or bringing Jalen Hurts off the bench. You always want to have that option. That's one more thing a defensive coordinator's got to prepare for.
I want to talk to you some more about some of the teams that Georgia plays this upcoming season. Let me follow up one more thing on Alabama before we move on, though. We actually spent some time before you joined us talking about what Kirby had talked about on Saturday, how you strike the balance of using what happened in January at Alabama as either a motivating uh-huh. force for Georgia or, you know, maybe becomes the kind of thing where you're worried too much about that and not worried about your own stuff. I mean, if I'm a Georgia fan here, I obviously like the idea of getting back to December and seeing Georgia play Alabama again, using that as sort of the measuring stick, the barometer of the program. It sounds like Kirby's a little skeptical of that idea, though. Is that the right approach from Kirby in your mind?
Well, that's the great thing about coaching. There is no one right way. From reading the stuff with Kirby, his thought is, you know, let's don't focus on revenge because revenge is a negative emotion. Let's focus on the things that are going to make us do better. Now, conversely, Nick Saban was very candid with me last year this time last year when I went to see him, he was absolutely using the loss to Clemson as a motivating factor. Okay, he just says, he said, let's don't waste a failure. Let's build on it. And so I think it's just on the personality of your head coach. And the great thing about football is there is no one right way to win. And that's what makes the game so special.
On paper for 2018, I think Auburn is definitely Georgia's toughest opponent. You can make a case that going to Baton Rouge, you know, just because it's a long road trip and Death Valley is a tough place to play. Maybe that's arguably Georgia's toughest game, but the opponent on paper, I think, is clearly Auburn. You've been to Auburn so far this spring. I'm assuming that Auburn's still going to be really good in 2018. I think that Jarrett Stidham's a really good quarterback. They're replacing a lot of stuff here, too, but my assumption is they're going to replace that effectively based on what you saw from Auburn when you went there and just sort of your general, you know, viewpoint of the Tigers here. Is this still a top-10 team in your mind for 2018?
Absolutely. They feel really good about where they are. Now, you lose great running backs like Kerryon Johnson, Cameron Petway, but when has Auburn not had running backs? Okay, they'll go 3, 4, 5 deep in running backs, so they'll be fine there. Stidham, you know, I talked to Jarrett Stidham, and he hasn't done very much this spring. He had surgery on his non-throwing shoulder. But, you know, they know what he can do. They're spending some time working the backups, and they're still deep at wide receiver. And the defensive line is going to be really good again. I sat down with Kevin Steele and talked to Rodney Garner for a while, and they feel pretty good. So, yeah, they're absolutely a top-10 team. And I think from a talent standpoint, they will certainly be the best team that Georgia plays.
And then, you know, the narrative coming off the end of last season is, you know, they play, you know, Georgia in Jordan-Hare Stadium. They play Alabama in Jordan-Hare Stadium. And the environment was red hot that day, and both Alabama and Georgia had some trouble there on the road. But then it becomes one of these things of, well, Auburn looks good in its own stadium, but how does it look when it goes somewhere else? Is that a fair thing here? Because obviously in 2018, it's return trips. It's Auburn in Athens. It's Auburn right in Tuscaloosa to end the season. Is it sort of fair to attach that label to Auburn of, you know, it can beat anybody in its own building but sort of struggles away from home here?
Well, I don't think you can buy into that totally. There's no question. Look, they, in 2013, when they played for the national championship, they had those two miracle wins against Georgia and Alabama. Those were both in Jordan-Hare. And I will say this, the days that Auburn played Georgia and Alabama, and I was at both of those games, they were the best team in the country. But I don't think you can overstate the significance of the injury to Kerryon Johnson in the Alabama game and how that impacted the way they would play from that point forward, because he was the guy, he was the glue. As good as Stidham was, Kerryon Johnson was the glue that held that team together, that and a great defense. So I think you would have to favor Georgia and favor Alabama at home in those games, but I don't think it's completely accurate to say that it was all about playing at Jordan-Hare.
We're talking to Tony Barnhart from the SEC Network and doing some great stuff now for TMGCollegeSports.com. He's also got a great golf tournament coming up. I want him to tell you about that. Let me squeeze in a couple more things before we get to Tony's golf tournament, though. I'll be very honest with you for a moment here. I don't think when you look at what we think of as Georgia's chief rivals in the East, I just don't think Tennessee's going to be very good this year. I don't think Florida's going to be very good this year. You've been to Knoxville. My assumption is that Jeremy Pruitt is not working the whole lot right now. What did you see with your own eyes when you were there, though?
Yeah, the talent is simply not what you need to have to compete at the SEC level. I did their pro day as well, and I had some scouts that I trust tell me that the talent level has gone down. Jeremy Pruitt knows he's got a lot of work to do, and it's going to have to start with recruiting. I think they're going to get better in a relatively short amount of time because Pruitt brings an edge to that program that they need, in my opinion. And so I think they're going to get better. They're just not going to get a whole lot better this year. Florida, I think, is going to have a chance. If Emory Jones can kind of help him at quarterback, that has been the big issue, the inability to recruit and develop quarterbacks and therefore fix the offense. Florida is a team I think is going to get better quicker than Tennessee will.
Yeah, I think the thing for Tennessee is, you know, for Pruitt, he's obviously a very aggressive recruiter, and you saw a lot of examples of the 2018 class up. They were probably second choice for a lot of elite players, uh-huh. But Tony, as you know, there are no silver medals in recruiting. And if for a Vols fan right now, that may be the most frustrating thing of, he's clearly sort of making up some ground in recruiting, but it's not enough to get that signature as of yet. It's just enough to be in that top two position.
You got to be in the program for a while.
Yeah.
Figure out, you know, what to do. Now he's recruiting the same players that he's recruiting in Alabama and stuff like that. But you're going to have to have something to show for it and do something on the field. And so again, I think Tennessee is going to get there under Jeremy Pruitt. It's just not going to be this year.
All right, so you were at South Carolina recently. They had their spring game on Saturday, and the big talk coming out of Columbia is Gamecocks want to play faster this season. Now,
yep.
I think of Muschamp as a defensive-minded guy. This feels like the kind of thing we talk about in the spring and sort of forget about by the fall. Do you really think they're going to offensively play at a much faster tempo here in 2018?
I've had three conversations with Will Muschamp. One of them was in his office for about 20-25 minutes. And yeah, I didn't have to bring it up. He brought it up. So we're going to play fast. That's just what we get. And I think what he's seeing is that, you know, the days of blocking and tackling and out Alabama, you know, you're not going to outdo what Alabama does. He realizes what's going on at Georgia. I think he believes the tempo is going to give him the best chance to win. They're going to be better on the defensive side of the ball. They got a guy in Jake Bentley who's got a lot of skills, and I think he's looking forward to it. And I think when he elevated Brian McClendon, the offensive coordinator, and brought in Dan Warner, who's a veteran offensive guy, he said, hey, we want to go faster, want to wear people down. And so now we'll see. You could be right, Brandon. He could be fooling us all. You know what? They play Georgia on September 8th in Columbia. I think we'll find out a lot there.
Yeah, that's a very good point. It's Tony Barnhart. You can find him on Twitter at MrCFB. See him on the SEC Network. You can read his stuff at TMGCollegeSports.com. And, Tony, before we let you go, you've also got a big golf tournament coming up, and I want to give you a chance to tell some folks about that because it obviously goes for a great cause. How can people find out more about that?
Well, thanks, Brandon. Yeah, the Honduras Outreach Incorporated is a group that's been going to Honduras for a long, long time. I got involved 3 years ago when they Coach Vince Dooley has been going over there for a long time doing work, and they built a soccer field and called it Vince Dooley Field and dedicated to him in Honduras about 5 hours out of Tegucigalpa, and that's when I got involved in it. They came to me and asked if I would attach my name to their golf tournament. So it's the second annual Tony Barnhart HOI Classic. It's a TPC Sugarloaf on May 7th, a wonderful venue. Last year we had Coach Dooley and Steve Spurrier and Wes Durham and Matt Stinchcomb and David Green and a great Frank Ross. This year we got those guys coming, Aaron Murray coming. It's a very good Georgia contingent. But anybody wants to see about the tournament and maybe sign up and play with us, again, it's May 7th at TPC Sugarloaf. You can go to HOI.org, and we're really excited about it.
So HOI.org, the website, May 7th, the golf tournament. A lot of college football names that a lot of fans recognize. We'd love to have you be a part of that. Tony, thank you so much for being here on Dog Nation Daily. I'm a big fan of your work, and it's been great to have you on the show today, and we'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
All right, Brandon, keep up the good work.
Yes, sir, thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Great to have Tony Barnhart here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza today. I like Tony a lot. He is a super guy. Talk some college football with. It's one of my favorite things from time to time. I'll just sort of bump into him somewhere, and we'll get into a little chat. And it's always a lot of fun. It's really good to have Tony here on Dog Nation Daily today. And don't forget, you can check out that golf tournament benefiting the great work going there in Honduras by going to HOI.org. It's May 7th, TPC Sugarloaf. And the names that he just rattled off being there, that's a pretty good collection of folks there. So good stuff there from Tony Barnhart on that. So as we mentioned, as we start our SEC through here, and by the way, we'll do SEC Country Live this afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the SEC Country Facebook page. South Carolina does have its spring scrimmage on Saturday. I did not get to watch it. I was told, though, that the crowd did not look great. I know Spurrier got involved here. We'll show you some of that video on SEC Country Live later on this afternoon. And I am still emphatic about this, that I don't think that South Carolina fans should have even welcomed Steve Spurrier back. I just feel like that this is it's very weird to me that this guy who essentially re-embraced Florida the moment he left your program and ran your program into a ditch, treated it like a rental car, before he let go as a Florida coach. It's insane to me that South Carolina fans would have welcomed this guy back in open arms and made him a central figure of the South Carolina spring game. But I guess you do what you have to do here. But I didn't like this from South Carolina. But nonetheless, the important stuff for the Gamecocks on the field, I don't know that we learned a lot about South Carolina from this spring game necessarily, because more than anything else, you had a lot of people who were injured. You had a lot of people who were not going through the spring practice. I think a big part of what happens for the Gamecocks offensively this season is going to end up being Deebo Samuel, both in terms of what he's going to be able to do as a kick returner, what he does as a wide receiver. He doesn't play. You know, you had, like, I think a total of like 18 guys who were kind of on the injury sidelines here for South Carolina not playing. But Deebo Samuel's the biggest part of this. And ultimately, as we said with Tony Barnhart a moment ago, I just don't believe that South Carolina is going to play fast. Even if it is, and I thought Tony had a good explanation for this, they don't think they can block teams like Georgia, so therefore they want to play a different style. I mean, look, Muschamp is still who Muschamp is, and Muschamp is still a defensive-minded head coach, and he's not going to play a brand of offense that hurts his defense. Even if it's the right decision, ultimately, you know, he's going to sort of veer back in the direction of his instincts, which are to be as good defensively as you can, and your defense suffers when the offense plays too fast. All right, moving on here, speaking of spring games, Auburn has its spring game on Saturday. And as of yet, we don't really have a lot of update from Gus Malzahn about whether or not the Jared Stidham is going to be healthy enough to play in it. Now, this is more for fans than really anything else. Stidham is going to be fine for the summer. He's going to be fine for the fall. He did have the shoulder injury. Has thrown some, I guess, during spring practice. But in the early going for Auburn spring practice, he wasn't practicing at all. So, you know, he sort of used the spring to sort of work his way back into health. This is more one of those things of the injury is not a concern for the season, but is it a reason to sort of tune in for the Auburn spring game? If Stidham's throwing to some receivers, if it's games on the SEC network, I'd probably flip over there and watch a couple of minutes of it during my build-up for the Masters on Saturday. If Stidham's not playing, there's very little reason for really anybody, including Auburn fans, to probably watch the Auburn spring game there at that point in time. And as of right now, based on Malzahn's comments from Saturday, he's not saying a whole lot about this. What they are, though, talking about at Auburn right now is the emergence on defense of Markavius Big Cat Bryant. Kevin Steele spoke to the media, praised Bryant here this weekend. That's not the most recent. That's not the only time that's happened here this spring. Bryant has gotten a lot of talk, and it sounds like the young man from Crisp County is potentially on his way to a breakout season. Now, Auburn is kind of an interesting spot in that it, you know, it's got to replace guys like Jeff Holland off last year's team, but they still bring back, percentage-wise, a decent number of their sacks from a year ago, but more productivity from Bryant makes that pass rush even more effective. I think that Auburn's probably a pretty good team here in 2018. We just talked to Tony Barnhart about that a second ago, too. And then finally, and y'all, I wish this didn't put a smile on my face as much as it does, awful, and I mean terrible quarterback stats from Florida on a Saturday from their scrimmage. I don't know why they even published these, but the winner here was the backup, Kyle Trask, who goes 12 of 18, 182 yards, 3 touchdowns and an interception. Please start Kyle Trask at quarterback. I am begging the Gators to do that because I think that ends badly for them. Robbie Andrew, Gainesville son, by the way, first one to report all of this. But how about Felipe Franks, the guy that's supposed to be your starter? 7 of 22, 127 yards, 2 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and a fumble. Not a good day for Felipe Franks in that regard. Somebody else, another website I saw, also had some numbers for Emory Jones. They were terrible as well. I think he had negative yards passing, which is pretty funny. So bad day for the Florida quarterbacks, good day for George, and that's a great way to end the SEC through. All right, speaking of the Florida Gators and some pretty rough stats quarterbacks during the scrimmage, I guess they'll find one before October. 208 days from right now, George will go back to Jacksonville, get another win against the Florida Gators. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco Pizza, we count it down every single day. 208 days from right now, Georgia beats Florida again. It's our Gator Hater Countdown right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. By the way, quick programming note, no daily double today. We'll be back later on this week at the forum at forum.dognation.com. Another daily double. Great weekend for Georgia baseball, by the way. Knocking off Texas A&M 2 of 3. Looking like it's going to be a ranked baseball team here this week. That's really exciting to see. Also, quick final point to finish off the program. You know, we talked a lot about Alabama loss, motivation or not. I love Kirby. I love Tony Barnhart's idea of, hey, maybe you focus more on the positive than the negative. It's kind of an interesting thought. Maybe a great way to end Dog Nation Daily. We'll see you tomorrow.